I'm Anita Lustria, and this is Faith Conversations. Today on the podcast, I have Esther Emery with me, and I have to tell you two things. Number one, I'm excited to have Esther here because of what she's going to be talking about today. She's written the book, What Falls from the Sky, and the subtitle says, is How I Disconnected from the Internet and Reconnected with the God Who Made the Clouds. So that gives you a little bit of an idea of where we may be going with the conversation. I'm equally excited because this is my first podcast, other than with Mike, my husband, from our new location, our new home in Sarasota, Florida. So if you missed the podcast just before this one, Mike and I talked about making a big change from Chicago to Sarasota, and big change is probably an understatement. It's been 32 years since I have moved anywhere. And so it's all this starting over relationally bit and finding a new church and, you know, all these things take time. So I'm really happy that one of the constants in my life is the podcast. I get to continue to have wonderful conversations with people of faith, people who are thoughtful about living out that life of faith where they are, and I hope bringing interesting people your direction. Esther Emery is certainly one of those. Now, let me just say, I mentioned this last time, but I'll give out my new address. I know some of you support the podcast regularly. I am deeply grateful for that. And if you miss that address, you can send gifts to support the podcast to Anita Lustria, 8 White Oak Terrace, Sarasota, Florida, 34237. 8 White Oak Terrace, Sarasota, Florida, 34237. Boy, I got it memorized. Wow, it's always good to know your new address. Well, Esther Emery is a fascinating figure, I think. She used to direct stage plays in Southern California. In her words, she said that was a long time ago, and now she lives with her husband and three children off the grid in the foothills of Idaho's Rocky Mountains. Now, she used to live in a yurt, and maybe still is, but I think they're transitioning from yurt to a cabin or a home of some kind. Not that the yurt wasn't a home, but Esther, welcome. We'll get into that. So how are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on.
Well, I'm delighted to have you, and a couple of things. One, I think some people even are hearing the word yurt, maybe for the first time. So what is a yurt?
Well, when I first heard the word yurt, I thought it was some kind of an illness or something. I was standing in the kitchen with my husband and his brother, and they were discussing possible options for our off-grid homestead. So we were going to be moving onto a piece of bare land, 3 acres of wooded land, in, as I said, the foothills of Idaho's Rocky Mountains. And we were looking for a temporary living situation while building a cabin from the trees on the land. And I heard my husband and his brother talking about this yurt. I had no idea what they meant, but it turns out that it's a wall tent. So it's kind of a cross between a tent and a house. If a tent and a house had a baby, they might have a yurt. So it's almost walls. The walls are actually a lattice work. And then there's several layers of canvas and insulation over those frames. And so it makes a temporary movable home, and it's in a round shape.
So that's a yurt. So a couple of questions about the yurt, and we're going to get to why you made this shift off grid to the yurt in just a second. But I have to ask, number one, I was really glad you talked about insulation. I'm thinking foothills of the mountains in Idaho, not warm in the winter. So this is cold. So is the yurt plenty warm enough, or do you have a freestanding stove of some kind that heats it?
We have a wood stove that heats it, but it is pretty rugged living. Okay. You know, you have to keep that wood stove packed, and you do hear the wind and kind of feel the change of temperature in a way that you don't in a house with walls. So that's definitely got its advantages and disadvantages. It's a rugged way of life.
All right. Well, we're going to go back in time a little bit before the yurt. I think it's important for people to hear the backstory and really what propelled you to write What Falls from the Sky. And also, you know, if you forget any of the details or the name of the book, just go to anitalustria.com. I post any information about the guests there each week. So if you forget anything or need a link, just go there and I'll have all of the info on Esther. So you're in Southern California and living what to me sounded like a fairly fast-paced life. I think anyone in Southern California probably is living that kind of life. Talk about what happened.
Sure. So I had been very passionate about my career in theater. I was a theater director. I loved it. I loved storytelling, anything having to do with the stage, and the theater people really were my people. And I transitioned into being a mother. And I think this may be sort of familiar to some, that you find yourself needing to readjust priorities, and sometimes you don't have the bird's eye view to plan all that. Sometimes it kind of happens to you.
Yes.
And to me, it was just the worst case scenario. I had my career and my marriage and my children, and I was trying to juggle them all, and I just blew out and dropped everything, went completely into crisis, all sorts of things fell apart, and I needed to make a big change.
And big change you did make. And your husband, you know, there were crises on several levels, but the two of you at some point made a decision. I mean, you contemplated separating, or maybe you did. I can't remember those details, but eventually the two of you made a decision to leave Southern California and kind of try for a fresh start.
Exactly. So we did split up briefly, and by miracle and luck, we decided to get back together and to give it another go. But I realized that I needed to be a stay-at-home parent as much as was possible. I had to give up my career. And that changed our financial situation such that Nick, my husband, needed to get a different job. So we ended up traveling for a job completely across the country, 2,000 miles, from Southern California all the way to Boston. And then at the same time, I went from going to work every single day and even working very long hours to being a stay-at-home mom with a three-month-old and a two-year-old.
Ooh, okay, which is a big transition. And I know that there are women listening who really relate to that transition. Working full-time and going to work to working full-time at home, because it's no less of a full-time job. It's even more than a full-time job, right? But it can be a hard transition. I think it depends on the personality. I struggled. I only had one, but I struggled. I wasn't a baby mama. That just was not my thing. And I really was depressed and struggled with it. So how did you handle that transition from what also was maybe a bit of a, what people from the outside might have perceived as a glamorous life of, you know, writing plays and being involved in theater, right?
Sure. I certainly wore fancy dresses and accepted awards and that sort of thing. And then all of a sudden I didn't have any reason to wear a dress at all, you know, wear my pajamas all day long. So yes, that was a big change. And for me, it really felt like a crisis. Mm-hmm. I felt like I didn't necessarily have direction. I didn't know what was getting me out of bed in the morning. And I found myself severely addicted to my screens.
Ooh.
So I was in a different part of the country, and I didn't have my friends close by. And I would just get out of bed in the morning and immediately connect to past lives, really. Yeah. Trying to reach back into places I had been and find some kind of validation for who I am. And it was causing me to become more and more separated from my family, which was really in a situation where I needed to give them my full attention.
Okay, this is great, because this is where I'm, a little piece of where I'm living right now. So I'm really relating to this, having made a major move, and not across country. Yours was across country. Mine's was north to south. Same, you know, similar. And probably what made me realize how much I enjoy my connected life and screens, et cetera, was that we were a week in the new place before the internet provider could get here and set it all up. And our phones were having trouble with reception, just different things. And I thought to myself, wow, okay, I'm starting to get the Esther Emery story a little bit here in this week of not being wired. And also, I think when you do move to a new place, as you just mentioned, you don't have that relational network yet. And looking back to the past, the recent past to friends, that's one thing, because you want to maintain certain relationships as you move, or you desire to. But to totally live in the past, or to totally be what maybe, you know, you recognized as addicted, which I think probably most Americans or Westerners are, Maybe. I mean, that's a broad brushstroke statement, I realize. But do you think that's true of many of us, that we're addicted?
Yeah, I mean, I think I had a preview in a way. At this point, this was 2009, and I didn't even have an iPhone. It was a flip phone that I was giving up. And I think that our levels of addiction since then, so from 2009 to now 2016, have just exploded. And the idea of not being okay with going a certain period of time without being able to touch your phone is, I think, very familiar and normal to us now. In 2009, I think that was just beginning, honestly. So it's really amazing how fast these things are changing.
Yes, I 100% agree with that. I find it interesting, too, and I'm not sure what to make of this. I don't know if you have thoughts on this. I find that I feel more safe if I leave the house with my phone. Even on a little bike ride within a small community, I feel unsafe if I forgot my phone at home. And 5 years ago, I never gave that a thought. I didn't think about my safety in terms of having a phone with me. What do you make of that?
Well, I had to face those same questions of whether it was safe for me to move around without my phone or move around without the ability to communicate in that way. I think it is so much a matter of perception. I was able to pick up a landline phone or even use a payphone to contact someone and find that those systems do still work.
Yeah.
It really is a matter of how what we think safety is. It's very much in our head what we think feel safe as much as what actually is safe.
So you then made this decision, and I think that's really true, by the way. I think that our perception and I think these are very important things for us to grapple with. You talk about them so well in the book. And one of the things I didn't say that I want to make sure I say in What Falls from the Sky, your writing is absolutely beautiful. I felt transported and really moved to the place where I thought, okay, I have to contemplate this. I'm challenged by this. I need to think this through. My conclusions don't have to be the same as someone else's, but I do believe that as followers of a Christ especially, I think that we need to be compelled. I think you do it well in your book. You compel us to think these issues through and come to our own conclusions. They may match yours, they may not, but again, important to think this stuff through. So as you're realizing that you're looking back in the past, kind of addicted to the screen, you made this decision to actually unplug, not just for the week that I did, which I was forced to do, you unplugged for a year, a whole year. What? Talk about that decision. That feels so big.
Well, and that's where you find something out about my personality, which is that I'm a bit impulsive. And it seems to me almost like a lark or an adventure that I could go on. Oddly, I think originally it was intended to be another escape from some of the issues that I didn't want to deal with, another way of thinking about something other than what it would really take to heal my marriage and to be the woman that I wanted to be. But I say that God sometimes plants seeds in jokes. And I love that. I love that God could reach for me with what would actually catch me. I mean, think about what an effective net. So I actually was on the phone trying to cancel my cell phone. And the customer service provider was giving me that kind of spiel and trying to convince me to stay on. And it just came out of my mouth completely as a joke, trying to make a laugh. I said, well, you know, I have to give up my cell phone because I'm going for a year without it and I'm going to write a book. And the person on the other end, she stopped her sales pitch and said, oh, I would read that book.
Ooh.
And I thought, oh my gosh, I just wrote my future. This happened. I'm doing this. So that's how it started. It's as silly as it sounds, that's how it all began.
Oh, I love it. Wow. And then you're kind of stuck with that decision. And you had the fortitude to not go back. Were you tempted?
Oh, sure. And this is where another aspect of my personality, I am both impulsive and stubborn. You know, there it's possible for your faults to serve you, you know, and in this case, I think my faults really, really did. Once I had decided to do it and I realized that it was going to be very hard, I thought, oh, well, now I have to do it because I don't want to have this beat me. I don't want to say I couldn't do it.
Wow. I don't want to say I couldn't do it. Would you do it again? For another year.
Well, I don't think so, but that's partly because my family has matured to a different expression of some of the same values. I don't think I would need to do it the same way.
I was thinking that. I was thinking you probably wouldn't need to. And I want to ask this question in the middle of that. In the midst of this decision and unplugging for a year, did you see God meeting, not only meeting you, but did he work in your family and do some healing work because of that decision, do you think?
Yes. So I found a miracle of empty space, which I think I had not experienced since I was a child. Mm. The actual experience of nothingness, not filling it with entertainment, not filling it with communication, not filling it with kind of busy work, that feeling of empty space was a miracle for me because it allowed me to literally grow, regenerate. And that's where Christ met me. And I have to tell people who are listening that I was not prepared to be a Christian. I had left the Christian church as a teenager, and I had no expectation that this was going to be a spiritual experience. I was going for a year without the internet. I was having an adventure. But as soon as I met that kind of silence and open space, I felt almost this call inside me, just a yearning to get back to church and to read the Bible and to reconnect with my spiritual self. I certainly wouldn't have planned it that way, but that's how God reached out for me, really, with a long arm.
So you grew up in a Christian home, a Christian family, so those were your roots, but you had moved away from that. In fact, married someone who did not have faith roots. Is that true?
That's correct, yes.
In fact, I'm thinking, as I recall reading in your book, you labeled your husband, early on in the book anyway, as an atheist.
Yep.
True? What has been his spiritual pathway since this year of you unplugging, and you know that was 2009 at this point? Where do things stand in your family today?
Well, he still is not, he wouldn't consider himself to be born again, and he's very comfortable with my journey and very engaged with raising a Christian family, in the sense that he's fine with how we teach our kids and how we celebrate Christmas and how, and we off and on go to church. Our lack of attendance at church has more to do with our lifestyle and the fact that we're in the woods, literally in the woods.
I was going to ask, how far would it be for you to go to church when you do?
Well, particularly on a snowy day, it's a full hour. So, and that's not to say that that shouldn't be, that there aren't reasons to do that. But just right now with the animals that we have and all the transitions that we're going through, it's not working out for us. But we do celebrate Christian traditions. We follow the Christian calendar in our home, and we pray with our kids, and my husband does pray with us. And all of that is a lot because he's watched the real changes in me, positive changes, tangible changes in me that he's been able to witness.
Has he read What Falls from the Sky?
Well, he's heard it read aloud to him.
Okay.
Because the story is so personal.
Yes.
As I was writing it, I would say, "All right, Nick, you need to hear this part. I need you to sign off."
Okay. I wondered if he signed off.
Exactly.
So he did.
Yeah.
Okay. Very, very interesting. Also, in the process of unplugging, other interests started to develop or maybe raise back up in you. I don't know. I know cooking and gardening were a couple of things that were interests of yours, and I don't know if they reemerged or emerged for the first time when you went offline.
Well, those were points of tension and actual hardship in my soul, because I was raised by a very unusual figure.
Yeah, tell us about your mom, because some people might recognize her name possibly, or, you know, at least when you tell the story here.
Certainly. So my mother's name was Carla Emery. And in the 70s, she wrote a book that was first called The Old Fashioned Recipe Book, and then The Encyclopedia of Country Living. Her passion was to maintain a knowledge set about living off the land, which she felt was being lost to urbanized American culture. So she started writing down all the skills of the old timers, how to churn your own butter, how to milk a goat, how to butcher your own meat, how to cook right from your garden. She wrote down all of this information, and she presented it back to the world. And she had a following. She had a tremendous following because there were people who want this information, who valued and respected her ability to maintain the old ways. Mm. Well, I, as a teenager, thought that was all just a lot of bunk.
Typical teenager, it's the point of rebellion, right?
Well, sure. And it was embarrassing. And it didn't seem in the 90s to be very popular. So I went completely the other way, and I didn't even keep houseplants, and I just didn't have anything to do with this cooking kind of domestic idea of being a human, and certainly specifically a woman. And so when I found myself as a stay-at-home mom, trying to cook my own meals, and the only kind of cooking that I knew how to do was this kind of simple life cooking that my mother does, where you make your own bread and you make your food from scratch. And I found myself really wrestling with identity and whether I wanted to be like my mom or not. And the year without internet allowed me to go through a process of healing in that relationship and to restore some of my interests in my mother's passion.
Oh, fascinating. Surprising, I'm guessing.
Oh, yeah. Again, I mean, if I had known what this year without internet was actually going to be, I'm not so sure I would have started it.
Yeah. Have you had conversations with your mom? Is she living still, number one? Is she?
No. She passed away several years before this.
Oh,
she never saw
wow.
my Wow. So she had died, actually, and this may be part of understanding that when I was juggling and trying to drop all the balls, my mother had passed away a year before my first child.
Oh.
I really was kind of going blind into motherhood. You know, I didn't
miss that so sorry. Before. That's hard. That's so hard. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that definitely, absolutely played into things, you know. Oh, yeah. Fascinating. You know, I'm curious. Well, I have so many questions. Do you ever see yourselves? And I'm guessing at the answer since you're currently building a log home, that you don't see yourselves going back to more urban living.
No, we're very committed, and part of that is that you have to make a stand. That's what we've decided. Coming from the year without internet and this experience of drawing a kind of a shape. First for a spiritual or transformational experience, and then living into that and not knowing what's going to fill that shape, but sticking to it anyway. My husband and I really feel that that's a good way to live. And so we've stuck ourselves to these 3 acres here. And a lot of the details are yet to be determined, but we're stuck. We're going to do this. And it gives us a shape for being our best selves, we hope.
I don't think I've asked this yet, but how many children do you have?
I have 3 children. They are 4, 7, and 9 at this point.
And largely, this is the only life they've known, I'm guessing. Or do they remember? Yeah, they probably, because they were how young, and did you have all of them when you first moved to the yurt?
My older two remember Boston.
Okay.
And so have a pretty good sense of that transition. My youngest is only knows the woods. She's never known anything but the woods. But I should say that all 3 of my children have cousins who live in the city. And so it's not that we're living, you know, we haven't really gone back to 1850.
Well,
live this year, this time.
Well, and I'll say this too: you haven't gone back to 1850 because you're sitting here talking with me on Skype as we record this podcast. So, and I remember thinking, okay, how are you doing this from a yurt? And I am assuming you have a generator, and I don't know what else or how that all works.
That's right. We have solar power, and we also have a generator to supplement our solar power. And I have limited access to the internet, but by limited, it means a couple hours a day instead of all day long, which actually is a nice balance for me. It feels kind of sane and like it can work over time.
Yeah. Well, and I'm thinking, you know, we, all of us who have 24/7 access, we could choose to limit ourselves. We could make that choice, certainly. Sure. Another question for you. Do you think your life is for everyone? Did you write this book going, oh, everyone needs to move to Idaho, Montana, Alaska, whatever, and live this kind of life?
Certainly not. I'm really glad you asked that, because it's important to me to let people know that I don't believe people should follow directly in my footsteps. I have a big, beautiful story, and I'm so grateful for it, but I just hope that it encourages people to make bold moves in their own context. There's certainly no need to imitate any of the paths that I have taken, but just to be encouraged to step out to the edge of risk, whatever that is for you.
Anyone listening, regardless of where we are, we can live authentically and successfully if we're not off the grid. That's exactly what you're saying.
Yes, yes, indeed.
Yeah. I'm wondering, too, just about practicalities, doctor, dental visits, things like that. How far are you from, you know, what... for lack of a better term, quote, civilization?
Well, it's about an hour, especially with the snow. And so we do feel some nervousness in terms of what an emergency might be, but also that encourages you to be very prepared as humans. You know, we do our own work to be prepared. I don't suggest that I would replace an emergency room, but that I would be able to do everything that I can do to support health and wellness in my family, even in an emergency situation, while getting our way to civilization, as you said.
Neighbors, what's the nearest neighbor? Do you have a community that you're a part of? Or how does the community piece work?
Well, that was really challenging at first. When we first moved out here, my whole first year, I thought, I don't have any people anymore because my city people don't understand what I'm doing. And country people are, by definition, not incredibly welcoming of city people who then try to move and join.
Okay.
Has everyone felt this dynamic before?
That's interesting because they probably think you're fly by night and you're going to be there about 5-6 months and be gone.
Yes. So we had to put in our time and we had to prove ourselves. But fortunately, we have done exactly that. And my husband, as a builder, is both inspiring and helpful. We have a close neighbor, actually, who's a woman who lives alone, who's 82 years old, and she's doing fine. I mean, in some ways, she's better set up than we are, but that's a good relationship because we're able to do some things for her, and then she's able to be supportive and encouraging to us, and we're really grateful for those kinds of connections. Mm.
Esther, you were in a very creative field. You were in theater, in the arts, playwright. How do you experience or how do you feed that creativity where you currently live?
Well, it's a beautiful thing, actually. I used to think of creativity as something I had to do by myself. I had to generate it somehow to be a creative person all by my own will and force of will. And it was a very, very hard work. But now I live in the wild and I'm surrounded by God's creation. And I find that my creativity as a writer and as a human being is really integrated and connected into the beauty of the natural world, which is the most beautiful artwork that I can imagine. And I feel very connected to that. It really feeds my creative soul.
What about your children? I think about in this wired age, so many of our kids are playing video games, maybe even addicted as we are to our own phones and other screens. What does it look like to feed their creativity?
Well, we actually have a YouTube channel, and my kids are really featured on that YouTube channel, showing a lot of how they live day to day as off-grid kids, and essentially screen-free kids. I think it's they're really getting the best of the off-grid life in a way because as children, they don't have some of the stresses and strains of it. They really enjoy a lot of open space and a lot of creative play. My 7-year-old is very accomplished at yarn arts for a 7-year-old. She can complete crochet projects, and
wow,
that's wonderful to watch. She's very dedicated, and she comes up with an idea and really sees it through to the end at age 7. And I think that has a lot to do with or just the open space in her life and lack of distraction. But they also just, they'll entertain themselves with anything. My little 4-year-old will take whatever tools or stray bits of wood from her dad's projects, and she'll play pretend with them. And they make origami frogs and compete with the jumping games. And I mean, they'll just play with anything. I think it's a really beautiful thing to see.
I love it. The fact that you mentioned, your husband's projects, I want to interject this question quickly. Some people listening to the podcast might be thinking, okay, you're living off the grid. How do you support yourselves?
Yes. And that is a constant challenge. Part of living off the grid is to need less. And so our number one financial strategy is to need less. But that doesn't take you all the way through.
Sure.
So we certainly do still work. We're both freelance. My husband is a freelance builder. He does finished carpentry mostly. And I, of course, make a little bit here and there as a writer.
Okay. All right. Bottom line, I could go on and on talking to you for a long time. I'm going to, again, highly recommend your book, What Falls from the Sky. Beautifully written and so interesting and instructive, and I think, we'll really meet people where they are. So I'll say that. And also more about your YouTube channel. I will have all of those links at anitalustria.com if folks, aren't finding it. But final question, what do you want people to take away from your book?
Well, I've been gifted a beautiful story of possibility. And I just want to offer to people that there is a possibility of finding rest and simplicity, even in this crazy busy world. I think we so often are chasing the clock, and we're chasing our responsibilities, and we just go, go, go. And there's such a sense of necessity to that. And I want to offer a counter narrative that it is possible to take just a moment to rest and to recover that capacity for rest and the healing and joy that can come with that.
Oh, that's beautiful. And it has been a delight to talk to you. Thank you so much for taking the time and coming to us from your yurt in Idaho. Thanks, Esther.
Thank you so much, Anita.
I'm Anita Lustria, and this is Faith Conversations.